Hello, everyone. Welcome to the What Does the Future Hold for Internet Video panel. And looks like we got a pretty packed room here. I will just say that before we start, there's a few rules. We have beer. Hopefully you guys do, too. If you don't, that's your problem. Whenever somebody says the word paradigm, they're required to drink. Also, when we have Q&A... All right.
You guys are cheating. You didn't.
You might have to revise these rules. And then when we do Q&A, whoever asks a question can direct one of us to drink as well. It's just one of us. So, welcome to I already said the name of the panel, right? Yeah. What is the future of the video?
It's going to be one of those.
So, just to give you a little background, so there's been a lot of video panels this past few days here, and this isn't going to be so much about business models and how to make money, because we kind of already talked about that. So I think we're going to concentrate more on things like policy issues, net neutrality, and talk about some things that make online video unique from traditional media, such as audience engagement, community, freedom, and we'll see what else. So I will introduce everybody. My name is Eddie Codell, and I am the co-founder and producer of Geek Entertainment TV, and also a proprietor of Eddie.com. To my left is the esteemed Mickey Krimmel from Rever, Community Director of Rever. Sorry. Okay. And to her left is Kevin Rose of Dignation, CEO of Dig. Excuse me, Chief Architect of Dig.
Oh.
I'm fucking it up. You know what? You guys just go ahead and finish it off because this
last
ain't going
panel
well.
Of the day, people.
Yes. Okay. So that's Kevin, and then to his left is Scott Watson, who is CTO of Disney Imagineering, and to his left we have Kevin is not Kevin Rose, but is Kent Nichols, also begins with a K. Yep. Who is part of the Ask a Ninja team. So, first thing. I think I'll just dive right in. So we only have an hour, and I want to have a lot of time for questions and stuff. I'll dive into net neutrality as being the first thing we talk about. So net neutrality is a concept that has several definitions depending on who you talk to or who's many definitions out there. So Tim Berners-Lee, inventor of the web, defines network neutrality as if I pay to connect to the net with a given quality of service, and you pay to connect to the net with the same quality of service or higher, then you and I can communicate across the net with that quality of service. Google defines it as network neutrality is the principle that internet users should be in control of what content they view and what applications they use on the internet. And that's just two of a few. There's a lot more. So to kind of just get things started here, I'm going to show a video since this is a video panel. And I don't know if you guys have seen
this. Wake up, everybody. Stop sleeping. They want to charge more. Big companies are creeping into our internet. Internet's in distress. Let's answer the SOS. I'm the internet. You're the internet. We're the internet. Now that's the internet. I like the internet. We love the internet. And I can prove it.
Some net fairy dust made me who I am. Living in an online Neverland. The web's my playground. No suits allowed. Internet celebrities, let's sing it proud.
I'm the internet, you're the internet. We're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet. And I can prove it. I'm the internet, you're the internet. We're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet. And I can prove it.
It's not my tights that cut off circulation. Big business wants to control the net nation. What you can see, how much you should pay. Tell me, is this the democratic way?
I'm the internet, you're the internet. We're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet. And I can prove it. I'm the internet, you're the internet, we're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet, and I can prove it. Wake up everybody, stop sleeping. They want to charge more. Big companies are creeping into our internet. Internet's in distress. Let's answer the SOS. Keep it free and keep it open. Speak up or our World Wide Web will be broken. I'm the internet, you're the internet, we're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet, and I can prove it.
I'm the internet, you're the internet, we're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet, and I can prove it. I'm the internet, you're the internet, we're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet, and I can prove it. I'm the internet, you're the internet, we're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet, and I can prove it.
That's the future of the internet. So the question is, what do we do to keep it this way? I mean, I would hate to live in a world where I can't see videos like this. So, Kent,
hi.
What do you think we need to do? How do we protect the internet?
I don't know. I think it's a really kind of scary time right now. I think, you know, there's a lot of fake public space right now. You know, you've got all these sites that kind of purport to be like, hey, you know, just participate, be a user-generated site, you know, and create your MySpace profile and your YouTube videos and all that stuff. But if you look at the terms of service on a lot of those agreements, a lot of those sites that you just kind of agree to by joining, it's essentially they have like kind of free reign and free license to do whatever they want with your content, as long as it's up there. And, you know, and I see, you know, particularly with the kind of MySpace of the world where, you know, they parse everything that you type into your MySpace profile. Like they check every URL to make sure it's an approved URL and that you're linking to some site that they approve of. You know, it seems like, the kind of battle for net neutrality that happened last year, which was kind of on the pipe provider level, that danger is somewhat past to some degree, but I'm sure they're always going to continue to fight to make a tiered internet system. But it seems like I didn't join that fight, you know, to protect the rights of creators and new voices of people. So people like, you know, me and my partner Douglas, you know, like when they decide to get together in their apartment and shoot something that's weird and that would never get approved in any sort of meeting anywhere by some corporate entity, like, you know, hey, we just want a ninja to shout at the camera, you know, like if I had to go into some office at, you know, at any one of these video content sites, like they'd just be like, that's not funny, that's not good, you know, and they would say no, and like they wouldn't fund us and they wouldn't do whatever, they wouldn't approve us. And so like I'm most scared about just the people not being able to like have that kind of free reign, and like by like signing away their rights with these terms of services of if by being on MySpace you have to use their video sharing, and then their video sharing becomes more regressive and they own your rights and your underlying intellectual property.
What was your deal with MySpace? Because you're like, dig my story, it's anti.
Yeah. Well, no. Well, like they part because
there was something
they
he parse, had.
Well, and you used to never dig anyone's story, asshole, but now you do. He's like, no, I don't want to influence the community. I was like, shut the fuck up and dig it. But no, like, so they parse everything. So like, so you can type like, and they don't tell you what they're filtering out. They just do it, and so it's insidious. They never really let you know what's going on behind the scenes. And so like, I'm really trying to figure out a way and an intellectual platform to figure out, like, you know, with lawyers and academics and activists, of like a way that we can figure out a user bill of rights where for these, you know, web 2.0 sites that we can, you know, lay down a foundation where, you know, if you create a profile on these sites, you're not just squelching, you know, all future rights to your voice, and which is horrifying, and which is definitely a possibility and is already starting to happen. And Yeah, so it's basically that. It's just like, if you're going to parse out a site because it's against your commercial interests, at least let me know that. And at least have a central repository of lists. So because MySpace came back saying, oh, there's no way we could make that list public because we don't even know ourselves. It's like, well, well, someone knows. Like, the parser knows, obviously, and, like, it's checking a database somewhere. And so just make that database, you know, just make that list public. You know, if you're going to do it, if you're going to be a dick, just – tell me how big of a dick you're going to be, you know?
Good times.
Good times.
Indeed. So, what do you think? Do you think this requires regulation then? Do you think government needs to step in and take a role here? Or
no, there's a free market solved problem? Like, that's always fucked up, you know? Like, if you're trying to say lay a heavy hand on regulation, like, you know, the internet and HTML, everything is built on, like, open linking, and, like, you have access to all these things, and which is great, and which should be the case. Like, you know, MySpace was created as a way to people to express themselves. Like, you know, it's like a new way to make a homepage, essentially, but it's not. It's much more. It's very regressive, and, like, they can do whatever they want, especially under the specter of News Corp. And you know, it's just kind of.
It doesn't seem like a real problem to me, honestly. It's hilarious. Now, by the way, I'm going to say why.
He works for Disney and is...
No, but hold on a second.
Seriously, he's the commercially voice of old media.
Exactly. I'm the commercially voice of old media. No, but it actually has nothing to do with actually old media or, for that matter, you know, controlled environments like, you know, like MySpace. Honestly, I think MySpace kind of like, you know, a place for kids to play safe and stuff. And, you know, you have a lot of, you know,
have you bought drugs on MySpace yet?
No, unfortunately, but I mean, I guess that's actually a real, that's a real issue, is you have really little kids on MySpace, and they start there, right? And but at the same time, as long as there's bandwidth, it's, you know, bandwidth is free. We have the issues of basically nobody's trying to stop what sites I get to. Nobody's trying to stop me from making my own site where there's complete freedom of expression, right? I don't think we
right,
actually
but,
have.
But like, but you got,
you,
you got just
you have to go by their rules.
Sure, fine. I mean, like, that's what I'm saying. It is a gray area. But, like, at the same time, MySpace is trying to purport to become, like, the homepage of everyone, and, like, it is a homepage of a lot of novice and rookie users that don't know what they're signing up for. And so if they're trying to become, like, the ringtone of the internet, essentially, by becoming everyone's homepage, and then just by insidiously allowing, like, selectively allowing only the commercial interests of what their website allows, you know, like the people that have officially negotiated an agreement with MySpace that allows MySpace to link to them.
Sure, sure.
Like, that's regressive, anti-internet, anti-expression, and everything else.
It's normal business freedom.
Right.
No, but freedom, and the second it becomes, you know, those terms of use become too onerous, people go elsewhere, right? I mean, all of a sudden you have a competitive advantage to go someplace that has freedom.
That's the scary part, you know, it's like all the little sites are now being bought up by big media companies, and that trend is only going to continue. And I can't see, like, big media companies having positive terms of service. Like, I feel like the trend is more towards what MySpace is doing, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you prevent that?
I don't know. Again, as long as when it's a problem, then I think we have the freedom to make new sites. When I heard net neutrality, by the way, it's like the problem I had with it was the you had two different definitions already, right? And one of the practical issues about video on the internet as opposed to just freedom of expression is that term quality of service,
right?
And that's just that's a real problem, actually, is that you might get a 3 megabit line or something like that, you know, and how often do you get 3 megabits on a 3 megabit line? Right, especially, you know, at a popular time.
Usually at IS people tell you that's they give you the high rate of what you can get. They don't give you what you're going to get or what the average might be.
Right. The dirty secret for people who don't do sort of ISP work, you're not like on the back end, is that ISPs allocate somewhere between 20 and 30 kilobits per user. You know, if everybody who subscribed, say, you know, went on at once, you get 20 or 30 kilobits. You can barely do voice over that, right? So there's just a practical issue as far as, you know, having, you know, video on the internet.
Okay. So, I mean, because video is such a high bandwidth thing, since you're sort of the contrarian here, what would you see as...
get off my yard.
I mean, what's your answer to this?
So one of the issues there actually, believe it or not, I actually think to make video like ubiquitous on the net, it really means actually a new network. I mean, it means internet too, one that's been designed to handle broadcast. You know,
because right now, saying Al Gore needs to run again?
Pardon?
So we need to bring back Al Gore. We need to reinvent.
I'm okay with that.
I'm totally cool with that.
I'm fine with that. What we need is a paradigm shift. Yeah, really? I volunteer.
Good one.
Hold on, is it a chug or no?
You have to chug when they ask a question.
That's right. I think to get to some place where really video can be. We're the point where you can actually broadcast from your home, actually have a channel, like a live channel that everybody can watch. That actually requires re-architecting the net. It's actually doable. And in fact, a lot of the work that's going on internet too is actually about making that happen. But it's not a consumer brand.
Yeah. Right. So do you think P2P could factor in this at all?
So P2P actually, it seems like it helps. But in fact, if you look at how the network's built, it actually, it doesn't really help, is the short of it. That the data has to go up to like a Metro CO and back down again, and it's going over these same small 43 megabit lines that are serving thousands of people, right? So you have 2,000 people on one 43 megabit line, everybody trying to do a megabit, it doesn't work, right? So, but at the same time, though, P2P does help alleviate your server loads and things like that, and you know.
But you think long term it's just not scalable?
No. No, I think a lot of I think what we have today, basically on video on the internet, is what you can expect to see for the next 8 years, as far as from the technical point of view, right. As far as like the performance you've seen today, you're gonna see that for five to 8 years.
Gotcha. Well, we could do a whole panel just on net neutrality. Yeah. So, if people have questions about that, we can talk about that in a little bit. But let's move on to another section, which is community and passionate audiences. So, I think one of the interesting differences between internet video in mainstream, traditional broadcast media is the fact that audiences get a lot more engaged and are a lot more passionate with online video, and there's ways of influencing, as an audience person for any given show online, you influence that show. And so, I mean, Kevin, who does Dig Nation, has an extremely passionate following. And how does the relationship between your audience and you influence your show, and I guess how is it growing the show?
That's a good question. We do live emails and obviously everything that is on Dig Nation is from the community. It's all stories that the community submitted to Dig, and just ones that we want to talk about. But really, it's just an excuse for us to get together and drink beer and talk about computers, which we like doing anyway. Yeah,
no one would watch that.
Or take pictures of it.
Good show.
It's a lot of fun. But we like to do a lot of live events, so we bring a lot of people out and say, come drink beers with us, have fun, and which has been pretty crazy for us. When we first started doing this a couple of years ago, our first live event, we pulled in probably about 50 or 75 people, and then we just did Macworld, and we had around 700 people come out for that. So it was just insane, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a great way to bring people in and to interact and hang out.
And are you seeing your audience numbers grow as more people show up to these live events?
I don't know if it's event is a direct impact on the overall numbers, but it's been a kind of a steady thing for us. We started off, I remember the first couple of weeks, it was a couple thousand downloads, and some of that had to do with, of course, working at Tech TV and having some of that following that we then brought the shows online. But then we saw it go up to 10,000, 50,000, 100,000, and I think today we're around, what is it, 250,000? Like 250,000 a week now, download Dig Nation. So it's been pretty crazy for us.
Mm, wow. And do you feel, so obviously Dig is, Dig is what feeds the stories of Dig Nation there's sort of the multi-layer community element there, and then you've got the live stuff. Mickey, since you're the community manager at Rever, for the shows that you've seen that are hosted at Rever, I know that you know some of those shows, I think, fairly intimately. What have you seen in terms of community engagement and how it's affected those shows?
Well, we spoke about this a little bit earlier when we were preparing. Like, part of what makes internet video different is the quickness with which you can put it up and get it out there, right? So you're reacting to your community really quickly. You know, the community sending in questions and, you know, you create events around your show or, you know, Ask a Ninja is built on people sending in questions to the ninja. I mean, those things are really effective. Also, you know, we really encourage people to build their own site and sort of their own community in their environment so people can leave comments. And it's like, it's more than just the video. The video sort of is there just to spark the conversation and to get people involved around that sort of personal brand. We see those as like the most popular shows.
Right. Cool. And hey, Scott, I had heard recently that Disney was, I don't know if anybody from Disney owned up to this, but supposedly people at maybe Disney and other large media companies will create videos that they want to go viral, but not tag it as owned by Disney or they're not owning up that they created. And they'll upload to YouTube, hoping to get a lot of. I heard this specifically about Disney just prior to the panel. Yeah, so
I could neither confirm nor deny that.
Okay, no paradise just here then. No question.
You.
Oh, we have to drink. No.
Oh, he's
a paradigm shift. Everyone has to drink.
Right? Cheers. Right. I need another beer, by the way.
And I said it as well.
That's your third one.
Yeah, I mean, I've consulted with me with big media about like how do we make this video go viral, and like it's like
they paid for that.
Yeah, they did.
Hold on. It's not a slam. Ask it and just great, but you get cash to consult.
Oh, yeah, you get cash. And here's what you get cash for. You go, well, when you do things online, you have to make these videos good. And, like, they don't want to hear that. They're like, isn't there some magic way we can just get people to watch? It's like, no. The secret is if you make videos people want to watch. That's the secret.
Did you just use your cell phone to bust open the phone?
She broke the little thing.
He's a pro drinker, people. Do not mess with the rose.
I thought he was going to beer bong it, actually. That,
so where cool. Are we?
I don't know. You've ruined this panel.
You're in the pay of the man. That's what
I am in the pay of the man. I received $500. That's right. but it's basically, traditional media, like basically is under the model of we can advertise the crap out of this and then we can get people to watch the first time and then we can trick them into watching our bad thing once. And, you know, on the online side, it's like, well, if you create something that's really good, you don't need to advertise it. People will just watch it and they will tell their friends to watch it. And like that's a huge, like, they don't trust you. They think you're crazy when you tell them that.
So do you think that the mainstream media couldn't really replicate that model? I mean, do you think that they can engage audiences in a way? I mean, this is actually an open question to anybody in the panel. Do you think mainstream media can, or traditional television media can somehow engage a community in the same way that online media can?
Yeah, just make better things. I mean, you know, like,
Is it a quality issue, though?
Well, I think it's partly a quality issue, absolutely. And, and then just be actually responsive to your audience.
Well, that's the thing. It's like the tools aren't there to be immediately responsive. You're not asking people's opinion of a movie. You know what
I
mean?
Right.
You put out a TV show, you're not asking your audience what they think about it. You're just shoving it at them and assuming that they like it. You know, I mean, that's the difference. Like, I'm asking you, what do you think about my show? And how can I make it better next week? And how can I involve you?
Right. I think fundamentally the difference is you're talking about communication. And when, you know, we talk about sort of, you know, can mainstream media do the job? Mainstream media makes things like Lost, and that has a big old community around it, people who watch it and care about it and stuff. And, but it's not communication. I mean, it's not a conversation, right? And I think that's the big difference here with all the stuff we're seeing on the net. It's much more about just two-way. I mean, that's the magic, right?
Well, it's also, I mean, it's like you're targeting audiences differently on the internet. I mean, you're finding people that have certain interests or certain commonalities a television show is meant for everybody. You know what I mean?
I think when we were doing Tech TV, we were really good at, we took a lot of live phone calls and we did polls and we paid attention to the community. We read emails. And the fan base was just really into that and around what we were doing. But the problem is that you had executive producers that said, okay, you're limited to 6 or 7 minute segments. You really can't dive as deep as you want to into, a segment about how to mod an Xbox. You know, it would only be a 5 minute piece. Whereas online, when we take that content, we can do a half hour, an hour show about it. And it works because people will pause it and they'll sit there and they'll do the action and they'll come back and watch it again. And so that's been a big win for us and something that a lot of people have been happy with.
Well, that's kind of interesting. I mean, you've done a lot of shows. You've got, you know, you go into more, to longer sort of form content, in shows like System and the Broken. And do you think that kind of builds a following that then feeds into the other stuff you're doing? I mean, the fact that you can kind of like spawn off, even though it's not a very frequently updated show, you've kind of got stuff out there that's kind of a little more cult, a little more viral. And
we've tried to stay around the whole kind of geek thing, you know. Yeah. So if it's geek related, we just have the show about comic books now, and so there's like, what was it, 12 shows now, David? 12? I keep asking him because he does everything.
And 13, I think, right? Because you just added Accelerator.
I guess so, yeah.
That's what he said the other day. Cool. So since we're talking about mainstream media and how they might get or might not get community, I'm wondering about Juiced, which was called the Venice Project, and it's the sort of peer-to-peer answer to television, according to the guys who created it, which are the guys who founded Kazaa and Skype. So they're kind of serial successors. And so it's really interesting to watch and see if this actually kind of follows as well. But, you know, Juiced, from my playing around with it, is sort of a full-on video experience. You've got a television experience on your computer, but it's more of a, I guess it's kind of more of a lean-back experience, as I guess some people would say, but it has some of the interactivity that makes online interesting. So I think there's IMing and there's ways of sort of sharing links and things like that. Now, it's also built from the ground up with mainstream television studios in mind. I mean, they signed a deal with Viacom, so they're going to start distributing on TV and things like that. So that means there's DRM built into it, and they've answered the concerns of mainstream television. So I guess the question, again, to anyone really is this a potential future of the internet, internet television or internet video? And if not, what are the stumbling blocks here? Other than the
I'll get off the bandwidth thing. I won't talk about bandwidth. I think actually one of the things that I think is interesting about Juiced from my playing with it, again, is actually, and it's not nothing to do with the DRM, it's the fact that it's closed. Mm. I mean, I don't know how to put my channel up on Juiced.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
And so that makes it as stupid as anything else. I mean, from that point of view. It's not that the power of the internet is getting you know, users to communicate, and is two way. And Juiced right now is a very one way thing. Now it wouldn't. They can just change that. They can
right.
Change
just their overnight, mind. Really. Right.
Right. Yeah. It's just a matter of deciding that, so that they want to allow that.
Yeah, I don't know that they've answered that question succinctly yet, because they do have in their terms of service. If you upload something, you know, it's the bad one. You know, we own it. We can modify it. We can do whatever we want. So I don't know that they've answered.
Well, I mean,
that
can a user upload content?
You can't yet, but they do have in their terms of service. If you upload, we can modify, change, distribute however we want.
We can basically own it.
Yeah, I mean, they clarify just like YouTube does. We don't own it, but we can do whatever we want. I don't know the difference.
Okay.
Yeah, but also too, I think it's interesting too is that lean back versus lean forward, right? So everything else we see out there is lean forward, and it makes a lot of sense again on the net and but it also tends to take you towards short form content.
Right.
I have to admit that I'm on Juiced. I have actually watched like 90 minutes of long form stuff. Right. I mean,
like what?
During the workday.
Avalanche, the White Death.
No, I watched. It was the show from New Zealand. Secret of Happiness. Mm. What is it? Secret of Happiness is awesome. It's really good. Anyhow,
there's compelling
TV
content.
Channel.
If you look though at the most popular page, it's all short videos. It's all like under 6 minutes or something. I was just looking at it yesterday. So, and I don't know if that's just because people are playing around with it in beta, so everybody's watching short stuff, or if it's just because you only want to watch short videos on your computer. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Right, and that's where I think where the tension is, right? When you have it on TV, then you can sit back on the couch and then you watch a long form stuff. Yeah.
But like, I mean, for me, it's like, why reinvent television exactly? Like, we've got television and that works okay. And like, I can ignore that already, like, and surf the web. And like, when I launched Juiced, it wants my whole freaking laptop screen. And I'm like, No. I need a little postage stamp over here while I watch The Office, and I need my 20 tabs going on Firefox. Okay. And like, you know, it's just like, why do I need that? Like, why do I, and like, and then as a content producer, it's just like, okay, well, what cut of the ad sales are you going to take? You know, why can't I just have my RSS feed and I just own all of that advertising space instead of cutting Juiced into the pie when it, you know, or you have
isn't
to cut
Yoast
other people.
Yoast.
No, Yoast is like some Swedish person, but Juiced, it's pronounced Juiced.
It's a weird mashup between Swedish and
yeah. But for sure, though, with everything like with the chat rooms, all that kind of stuff, you can obviously do that while you're watching television. Right.
Yeah, because I can't launch my AIM client when I watch TV. Seriously, I can do all of that. I can do everything that Juiced offers. I can do right now, you know, with IM, Twitter. God, I love you, Twitter. and you know everything else. So I mean, it doesn't solve any new specific need. Like you know, to
but
me,
if they can bring you an audience of half million
yeah,
people, you might be.
No. They can't. They cannot bring me an audience of that because
well,
look at like any
now,
of these.
Well, not with your terms too.
Right,
I mean,
but any of these closed proprietary systems, like people all the time go, hey, I'm on TiVo or I'm on this, I'm on that. You go, great. Well, look at TiVo's got an installed base of 5 million people or whatever. Great. Okay. Cool. 5 million people. But then, like, you know, how many people can do the video iPod, you know, video iPodcast thing? Okay, that's down to 80,000. And okay, we're 50% of the 80,000. Okay, 40 grand. Okay, that's almost a rounding error for you know a popular show like Ask a Ninja. And so it's like, okay, well, how much am I really going to make on a on a $20 CPM off of 40,000 people? You know, so that's a 40 times 20. Which I can't even do, $160 or something? Like, woohoo! You know, like, I'm going to retire now, you know? Like, nice. Big fucking deal.
Well, cool. Just, yeah, I'm sorry. And one more, I just say, you got the bandwidth thing here, but the right now, it's like just YouTube and normal video stuff is somewhere around 40% of the bandwidth of the internet, right?
Really?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's crazy.
It's insane. No, it's what I'm saying. So this is actually one of the big points is, again, that the investment in the network happened in the 90s, right? And they built out, there's a lot of dark fiber and stuff. And since then, the ISPs have basically been slowly, you know, lighting those things up. But it's all sunk investment.
Right, but why did they build it out? They built it out because people wanted Napster. And, like, I want broadband, I want broadband. No. And now it's like, I want video, I want video.
They built it out because of the stock market. And I hate to tell you,
we're in another bubble, my friend.
No, but the point, well, that's possible. So, but the point is, in order, again, we're reaching sort of the cap of bandwidth, on the internet today. And we're bumping up against it already, you know. And so the point is, my point was, we're already.
Everybody stop uploading videos.
Right.
My point is that it's going to be like it is more or less today. And things like Juiced actually are going to, if they get super popular, I can tell you, it's slick. I think it's really neat. Right. If it gets to be a million people, go to the net. What happens is actually, it's not that the net crashes, is that the performance for the person using it gets sucky enough that they don't do it anymore. So now you're back down to, eventually you find sort of a number where it's just sucky enough or just good enough. That I can still use it, but the point is that you don't get that quality of service that you're used to, like with your cable or satellite or something.
Right. Well, you know, this kind of leads into another question I have about media consolidation. I mean, there's so many video hosting companies right now. It seems like there's 10 new ones every morning. There's YouTube, there's Blip TV, there's Rever, Vio, Vimeo, Brightcove, Metacaf, Podtech, just to name a few. And what's going to happen? Since if we are in a bubble, I mean, there's got to be some sort of shakeout. So some of these are not going to last. Some are going to get bought up. What do you think anybody is going to happen here?
Well, Ken, you and I talked about this before, and we were saying, the companies might go away, but the technology isn't going to go anywhere. You know, it's like as long as we can still have companies that do have creator-friendly terms of service, then there's still going to be that freedom where you can go out and build your own brand and do what you want to do. But I think it's important that we make decisions where we put our video right now. Like, you need to look at the terms of service before you decide where to put your video. And we need to talk about this stuff publicly. We need to blog about it. We need to do all that. But, like, as big media companies come in and buy out these companies, which is exactly what's happening, it's like the technologists and the people, like the creators that are working in this space right now have a huge responsibility to make sure that, like, our happy poopy Web 2.0 stuff melt into the big media side of things instead of vice versa. You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't want to lose that freedom.
Like, they adopt those principles rather than absorb and quash.
I think the content creators are going to flock to where the cash is, right? So I was talking to someone from YouTube the other day, and they have some shit coming. I mean, they're going to start monetizing this in a big way and offering content creators a good chunk of change like people do with AdSense for video. And I don't know what, I mean, even for Revision 3, I mean, we get a lot of really niche advertisers on our content, which obviously brings us some money. But, you know, for some of our lesser known shows that can attract that kind of, you know, big advertiser, big sponsorship type stuff, we might consider doing, you know, something like an AdSense type deal. I don't know. We'll see. But Prager's probably going to kill me now. But we won't. It's going to be interesting. The next 6 months are going to be a lot of fun because you're going to see people actually making money from their videos, which we haven't done yet.
Right, or not significant.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you know what? We're about 24 minutes away, and let's bring the audience into this. I know I saw some people itching to ask questions. So there's a microphone over here. I think that's the only one, right?
Things got a little more intimate.
So feel free to line up.
That's because they know we're
about gonna to get so drinking. Drunk.
And let's go ahead and start.
Okay. First off, Watson, you drink.
Cheers.
Oh, right, you're going to get drunk.
This is going to be bad. Maybe I should have
said that.
We're old media drunk.
Hold on, yeah, there has to be some, we need some neutrality. We need some,
with so many options for where to put my video, part of me wants to just go out and put it on every single thing possible so that it gets the widest audience. And part of me is thinking that's just going to spread it too thin, or what if I want to monetize it? I should just pick one place or even my own website and just put it there so people have to go there. Any thoughts on like what the best strategies are?
Yeah, build your strong domain. AskANinja.com, you know, has always been the best source for the newest stuff. And I can speak from experience of, you know, do not grow your audience through YouTube. Do not grow your audience through any specific video sharing site, because if that site becomes, you become unfriendly to that site or whatever, you want to make money and right now you can't on YouTube and, you know, this or that, you know, use bad business models to your favor. Embed their player on your site and just say, come to AskAninja.com or come to whatever.com and send it through that way. But do not do a lonely girl, because they hate themselves because they cannot shift their audience to their site. As you know, they still get some numbers on their personal site, but their biggest numbers are through YouTube because that's where they grew up through.
Yeah.
So build it on your own domain.
I mean, video sites are just, it's a tool, it's a platform. Like, they don't, you know, you have a community, but it's not a community that has a vested interest in that site. Like, you're better off if you're, you know, if your show is about cars, go find the communities that are about cars and draw them into your community. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't build a real passionate community on a tool.
Right, and old media has advice, which is build a brand, right? That's what Ask Ninja did. You have a brand. I buy your T-shirts. You know, I mean,
did you really?
I'm gonna give you
one. I got a free one.
Such a dick. Drink beer in your shows. Yeah, it's worked for us. So.
Okay, next question.
I personally think it's not a bad.
You're just gonna drink.
You have to tell someone to drink.
Ah. Oh, he can say it at the end.
Personally, it's not about web video versus broadcast or good versus bad. It's about just having the choice. I think the internet is giving us choice, and for a long time major labels and major studios and major publisher had control of what we can access or not. And I think that we've succeeded now because they're dumb and they didn't really understand it, but now they're starting to understand it. And how are we going to be able to fight to remain to be still able to have this beautiful content on the internet, whether I like it or not, it doesn't matter. Somebody else might like it. And those major labels, studios, and publishers are coming with, they're starting to learn. So I'm wondering, what do you think? How can we?
Do you think they, so you're, are you saying, do you think they can outfox us?
I don't know if they will, but it's scary. And I think you mentioned it in the beginning as well. It's kind of scary because they're finding some ways. Somebody last year, I did film and interact last year, and someone said, because there was the MPAA, it was in the studio, so people from the peer-to-peer were there, and some people from the MPAA, and they were yelling to each other, and some guy in the audience said, I pay for cable, I have HBO, but the last season of Six Feet Under, I wasn't able to be there because I was working, and I downloaded in BitTorrent, but you want to, like, you want to
make me a criminal for doing so?
For doing so, but I'm already paying for it. Right. I just want just in time information. I want this or that. Oh, and they're not. I don't think that the major studios are understanding what people want. But now they're slowly understanding, and as they're understanding, and probably gonna fight with us, how can?
I don't know if it's a fight. I mean, I don't know if it's a fight. I think, you know, as long as, like I said, we have sites for people like us that, you know, we can use to host our stuff that has positive terms of service, I don't necessarily think it's fight. I think it's just more choice. And in some ways, it's actually an opportunity. You know, like studios are building online production companies now, and they're looking to our community to pay people. Hey, make stuff for me. I'm going to give you money. I think that's an opportunity. That's not, you know, that'd be great for me, right? Like that's not a fight. So I think, you know, as long as we can like stick to our guns and keep the net neutral and like teach these people, you know, what we want and like that we want to keep our rights to our content. I don't know if that's possible, but given that, I see it as more of an opportunity.
Yeah, I'll say one thing too. So at least the big media that I know is not anti-free speech. It's, I mean, we're all individuals. We all value free speech. I mean, you know, and nobody's censoring the internet. I mean, it's, I guess, for good.
China is.
Well, no, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. Well, I'm sorry.
MySpace. Take that.
Yeah, MySpace.
Media.
Touche. I guess in the West and knock on wood, right? And I think, I mean, that's the real thing is obviously is when there's encroachment on free speech, and that's when we have to fight back. But I think
I do agree it's free speech. But it's money talks, and when you have millions of dollars to advertise or to make deals with people so that the eyeballs don't go to these smaller people.
Sure.
It becomes a gray line. Yeah. So who's supposed to drink?
He doesn't care.
Next question.
All right. This may be sort of a tangential question, but I wanted to bring it up because I come from sort of a traditional broadcast production background. And I've moved more into multimedia now, and I've sort of grown to love, like, internet video and all these great things that we can do with it. But there's a little part of me that dies when I see sort of, like, independent filmmakers and people doing really creative content and having to throw it to YouTube and having it get compressed to all hell destroyed. Mm-hmm. So now we have home theater PCs and Apple, of course, jumping into the market. I just had a personal question for all of you is, do you actually care if your content ends up on TV, or is it something where you're happy with people just going to a browser, downloading it, checking out, or do you have like higher aspirations to say, you know what, I'd love to be able to put out high quality content, feed it through the internet, and then get it to somebody's TV so that I can actually look at it in an environment where they're more comfortable, they're on a couch or seeing it on their big TV, and it's more like, dare I say, traditional broadcast.
Well, for us, it's always been about creating. I mean, we have like 6 or 7 different formats for every show that we output. So we want to make it available on any device that you want it on. So if you want your Apple TV, you can have it. But as far as actually seeing it on real traditional television, like I would never go there again because, thank you. It's honestly when we were on like a third tier, TechTV was kind of like considered like third tier Comcast, like, cable, and we were in 50 million households in the U.S., and our viewership was like a Nielsen 0.15, which is 150,000 people watching it in any given episode. I mean, now Dignation receives more viewers than that, so that's awesome, and that's just goes to show you don't need that big budget, you don't need that huge studio, you can do it with, you know, a 6-pack and a camera, so that feels good.
Well, a 12-pack in your case.
But is there sort of a fundamental limit to sort of the length you're going to do, right? I mean, is it, again, well, the question is, it's like if you're cozy on the couch, you'll sit back and you'll watch a 2-hour movie, right? And so I think that's sort of what I'm hearing is there's that lean-back consumption pattern.
Right.
You know, and honestly, juice on your computer hooked up to your TV, you might be able to give something like that.
No, I'm absolutely, and we'll provide our content. I mean, we release everything under Creative Commons and allow people to push it anywhere they want. So we'll continue to do that.
Yeah, and we release on DVD.
almost
1995. 1995. AskNinja.com/DVD. 40 episodes with everything in iPod video format as well.
Do you have extras?
And extras?
And tons of extras. And Easter eggs. Yeah, absolutely. No, but yeah, like I don't particularly care where people watch it, but like, but part of me is like, I don't want to make it. I do want to create a market for my DVD as well. So I mean, like I want people to watch it as much as possible, and we make everything freely available. But it's also like we only release in 2 formats because, you know, because we can, you know, like, I mean, so, you know, because like flat, like anyone can watch it on their browser on Flash and anyone can, you know, yeah, watch the iPod video just because that's a hugely installed client. So QuickTime's out there. So, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where, yeah, it's just kind of a balancing act of, you know, making it accessible, but then, you know, it's like, well, you know, if you want a really high quality keepsake version, buy the DVD.
Cool. Let's go to the next question.
Keep great for gifts.
Great answer, Ken. All
right. Give it to your mom. I did.
Hey, guys. So, great panel. You perked my interest when you said in 6 months we'd be seeing money from our videos. And I was just curious if you could elaborate a little bit on
Well,
on
Rever, you can do it today, right?
Yeah, totally.
And there's a few, right? I mean, there's Rever.
Yeah, I mean, there's Rever. You know, we share 50% of ad revenue with everyone who uploads a video. Some people do really well. And then, you know, like Metacafe shares money. I mean, there's a bunch of people that are now getting into that. I mean, Rever, I think, really started the conversation for revenue sharing.
Okay, I see.
So we're super proud of that. But I think with
Kevin, yeah, I was talking about Google's plans, but I really can't speak too much to that other than they have some cool stuff coming. So,
thanks a lot.
Hi, Jorge. I'm starting an online TV network for underground art culture in New York City, and one of the kind of problems that I have is that I'm not sure if this is more something I'm personally interested in, more so than it is an opportunity to be a show and build an audience behind it. I'm always wondering if, like, you'd ever have to reconcile the fact that this is something you want to do more so than this is something other people would be interested in looking in. You know, it's like the question between art and being in the business of entertaining people. And getting
Yeah, I mean, I would boldly choose to make it a show and be entertaining as well as telling the story that you want to tell. Like, you know, I mean, I think a big part of Ask a Ninja's success is that it's got a wildly catchy and annoying theme song, and then it ends with "I look forward to killing you soon." And so you know that there's a beginning, and then there's an end, and then everything in the middle is the middle part of it. And so, and then that's clearly a show. But no, but some people's video blogs are not like that. They're very nonlinear. It's just like, no, just boldly make a show of whatever you're doing, and then so people go, no, okay, that was over. That was an enjoyable episode. And yeah, so,
like, to focus on building a brand more so than being self-indulgent.
It doesn't even have to be a brand. It just means like, you know, give people a clear signposts of where they are in your entertainment experience, you know, and, you know, like, do not abandon the millennia of storytelling ideals just because, you know, you have access to an iMac.
Yeah, I mean, I know when a video is not engaging if I'm watching the little play thing to see like how far
along you are. Yeah.
Right. Which I was not doing during the gym sweater piece at the beginning of it at all.
Cool. Well, actually, I have a question about that. Is length of content. I mean, we Ask a Ninja, Dignation, and even Mickeypedia, your show. You have a show, right? Yeah. Mickeypedia.org. No, you have a show.
.com.
Excuse me. My God. But length of shows, you know, varies wildly between all three of you. And you know, there's no set, rhyme and reason to make sort of an across the board, you know, decision on what that should be. So, yeah, I mean, how do you decide what on length, I guess?
I just got a comment from someone the other day. I was talking about like an early episode we did, and they're like, oh, your episodes are so much shorter now. And I was like, well, the episode that you just watched was 1:30, and the episodes we put out now are 5 minutes long. And the only difference is now that we're really, really fast on editing. And so it just distracts people from the length. Nice. Yeah. So you know, like you can get away with being longer as long as you're just really
tight
much more engaging or just be faster than the audience.
I mean, it depends on the show, too. Like, obviously, Dignation, like, you guys are sitting on a couch with computers on your lap, right? And I want to hear what you're saying, and I want to look at you once in a while because you're kind of cute, but, like, I don't have to...
Not as cute as Albrecht. That guy's dreamy.
Yeah. But I don't have to have it open all the time. Like, I can start watching the show, and if you trail into a story I'm not interested in, I'll go and I'll browse and do something else, and then I'll hear you say something I want to, and I'll go back to you. And do you know what I mean? It's like... It's just a little bit more of a casual experience. That's how I watch it. I don't know. I mean, I think it depends on your content, obviously.
Yeah, we rely a lot on the message boards and what people tell us, because some of our shows are 45 minutes and some are, you know, an hour. And it, it really depends on what people are asking for. They say, oh, we want longer content, like go off on your tangents or drink more beer or just whatever they want. It's like, that's what we'll do.
Cool. All right. Next question.
Sort of in the spirit of where is video headed in the future, where do you see DRM playing a role in this? Like Steve Jobs saying he would get rid of it if he could. Right. Where do you guys see it, like, for video? Like, is DRM going to become standardized, or is it all going to go away? Or?
Okay, good question.
Yeah, short answer is yeah. I think for video, it's not going away. When we're talking about movies and television shows and things like that, I hope, and in fact, actually, we're actually working on. I'll tell you, for naive users, right, who like say use iTunes. And buy music and all, it works astoundingly well until you try to leave the iTunes universe, right? And a lot of people don't even realize if they're not computer people that, you know, that it's somehow protected. Actually we're working on an initiative right now actually to allow that kind of experience to, go across all devices. But I can't, that would be a boring topic if I go into any depth on that. I'll do next year. But for video, I don't, DRM is not going away for the movies and things like that is, I guess, is sort of the short answer. So one of the interesting questions is, do we start seeing it, on other video content that today is currently not DRM'd, right? You don't have to use DRM to basically say, oh, you can't play it or you got to give me $10. You can use DRM to go ahead and cause a transaction to happen and register the fact that somebody downloaded it and viewed it, right? So if you have an ad stuck in the front of that thing, and you're doing CPMs, then you can actually track it, right? I wouldn't be surprised to see people using DRM in this sort of very kind of almost passive way. No. I mean literally, like you just by opening up, say, Windows Media DRM file or something like that. You cause a transaction to happen. The transaction could actually be, it's free. You can have a copy forever. You can give it to all your friends. I mean, that could be the transaction, but the point is, but it's in effect logging it. The same way like downloading is logging it. But you don't track any sort of viral distribution that way. So, I think honestly, as you start to see PMPs that actually have high-speed wireless in them, and I can like zap, a Ask a Ninja episode, and I go, oh, this is hilarious, you have to check it out. Zap, right? Then you can't, you're not, if you're actually doing CPMs, you can't, there's no way to commoditize that, without something like DRM in there to go ahead and, you don't have to pay for it, it's still free, so ad supported, but it can be used to like track it. Pardon me? No.
Cool. Let's go to the next question. And nobody's asking anybody to drink here.
Oh, lame will.
Yeah.
I think I know he's going to. I'd like you all to shoot your beers. No, actually, I'd like to see Mickey pour her beer on Scott's head.
I already smell like beer. Sorry.
I don't want to know.
That happened before we started.
So I have a question about the future of video, and I'd like you all to be wildly speculative, and I won't hold you to anything you say. But I was wondering about the future, if you had any thoughts about the future of video aggregation. By that I just mean, like, is there something, so there's been this huge success around, like, you know, Forever or YouTube and sort of this mass distribution of content as a way of getting it out there. But I'm wondering if in the future there's something interesting that's going to happen, like some sort of new networks, maybe niche networks. Like, do you see a future for short-form video aggregation on the web, off the web, whatever? I guess maybe I'm asking a question about discovery. Are there crazy new ways we're going to discover video in the future that you've thought about?
Like a DVD of the Month Club or something?
Or like sure, a big video section, perhaps? I don't know. I mean, like, you're looking at like bad cable TV numbers for shows like, you know, Dig Nation and Us, like, you know, or actually moderately successful cable TV shows. So you're not like, and we're like the wild success stories, you know, and we're getting hundreds of thousands of views. So if that's the case for the most successful content on video content right now, like I can't see that being like bested anytime soon. The real story will be, you know, the people that consistently bring in like CSI numbers or, you know, from some sort of RSS feed video and on the net. You know, like I've talked to some of the people that we work with, and like, oh, there's no way, you know, you can do this. You're not as successful enough. You're not getting enough numbers. And I was like, well, what are you talking about? Like, we're getting great numbers, you know, and we, you know, we can deliver this demographic and all this stuff. And I was like, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, like the micro, like reaggregation of content, I don't know if that's ever going to be more popular than other things, especially in like an unlicensed situation where, like, you know, at some point you're going to raise the specter of, wait, this is a commercial use, you know, and this is a non-commercial CC license. And so, you know, we need to talk. And, you know, so I don't know. Does that make sense?
Anybody else?
You mentioned that Lonely Girl are kicking themselves now because they're not able to transfer their audience over from YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what you did differently that you're able to drive people to your site and build a brand.
We just raped YouTube on their bandwidth. We never, like, we send more people to YouTube and then they send to us. Like, if we post a video, and it's always been the case where, you know, if we post it, the embedded player on our site, our front page, like Eddie's about to play, or he's going to play the Reverb video.
Well, I was just bringing it up to show what's up there now.
Right. So, like, so we have an embedded player, and so, so we'll drive, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of views, depending on the video, to YouTube. But the community site version, but the YouTube community itself will only give us 20 to 40,000 views. So, like, you know, so the views aren't coming from inside the YouTube community that are searching on YouTube, but they're coming from our site that we're just embedding.
So you're using both Reverb and YouTube?
You know, I think some of the old videos are still on YouTube, and we never took them down just because, you know, it's still such a calling card in Hollywood to say, hey, look at where we are on YouTube, you know? Like, really?
You know? Well, you can see your progression, too, like, you know, your sort of, your evolution.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. We, you know, and then people, like some of the kids on YouTube, like, why'd you leave us? Why'd you abandon us? And it's like, well, you know, YouTube's not paying. I didn't get any of that $1.6 billion, so.
So you're not uploading your new content to YouTube?
We, like, I think right now I'm on a, I upload about a month late now. You know, just as kind of a courtesy to the people that haven't figured out our domain yet.
Oh, hey, I just noticed that you're doing this this Give Me Some Candy kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like Zay Frank does. Can you talk about that real quick?
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, like, you know, when, last year was an experience. Like, we got featured on iTunes in January, and then when we just kept building our audience, and then we went to BloggerCon, and everyone was, you know, we were following the Rocket Boom model. We thought Rocket Boom was like the bomb, and everyone did. And it was like, oh, great, this is perfect. They've got it out. They figured it out. They did their eBay auction for their advertising, and they made $40,000. And all we have to do is that, and we will have it all figured out. And we went to BloggerCon, and then 2 weeks after BloggerCon, the shit hit the fan, and the public divorce of Andrew Barron and Amanda Congdon. And I had a reality check of, oh my God, no one has this figured out. I better sit down and do this now. And so it was, you know, so I just freaked out. And so, like, I was like, okay, any way we can make money, let's experiment with it. And so, you know, we experimented with Rever, and that started paying our rent. And I was like, okay, cool, let's stick with Rever. And, oh, Zay's making money with Give Me Some Candy. Great, let's try that. And so, you know, and then, like, we got to get that DVD out. Let's do the DVD. And so, you know, so it was just basically, you know, let's figure out this business model because no one has this figured out right now. And, you know, and, you know, we just signed the big deal with Federated Media, and looks like, we, you know, we may have a book deal soon and all that stuff. So, you know, it's just been kind of a nice settling down where now we can just focus again on being funny and putting out, you know, things weekly-ish.
I think that's sort of the key, right? Like, you're building a brand, and then it doesn't matter if you're on the internet or a book or whatever.
Right.
You're just building a brand, and you try to monetize each of those pieces, right? Whether it's on the internet. Like, I mean, in the future, if this whole convergence thing happens, like, it won't matter if it's on the internet or TV anyway.
Right.
So instead, just focus on what you're building instead of, like, where you're building it.
Yeah, and focus on the deals and focus on maintaining control of your intellectual property and your brand and all that sort of stuff. And when people say, well, it's a non-exclusive deal, you know, like, but people will pay you for exclusive deals. So, like, so don't get sucked too deeply into, you know, those traps, you know, like have lawyers look at everything.
Anyway, I kind of violated my own initial thing where I said we weren't going to talk about money. So, but it was I saw those throwing stars and yeah, let that cool, go. Right? So, yeah,
can we have Watson drink to a paradigm shift.
Oh, that sounds like a
that sounds everyone. Like it's going to keep going. Then very little left. So, cheers.
Oh, we have more.
No, we don't. We're out of beer.
You can have some of mine.
Hey Kevin, you want to share your gadget you have right there?
No, we can't talk about this yet.
No, okay. Damn,
secret.
Next question.
Hey Rose, go ahead and take a drink. You're looking a little tired. So I forget how you
he's so yeah, hungover. I swear to God, he's so.
Took me out last night. I didn't want to say that. All night long. My question is: I work for a large nonprofit, and so the cool thing is we have like tons and tons of user submissions. They go to events, they film things. They post them on Google. They post them on YouTube. I mean, you know, everything you can think of. When we do searches, we just find all this content. And, I mean, we're all for it. You know, you want to put our logo on there, that's great. Because we want, you know, to people to know and stuff like that. But the question is as that gets, like, bigger and bigger, and, you know, you talk about giving up the rights to the content, and, you know, you talk about intellectual property and stuff. Because I know there's a day when there'll be something that is, you know, slamming the organization or whatever it is. And I know the community will hash that out among themselves, so I'm not worried about that. But I'm worried about where to send people when they come to us and are like, I have this awesome video. Should we go out and build something on our own and say, you know, we'd love your submissions to the site, or should we keep sending them to Google and YouTube, or should we go partner with one of them or something like that? But if they're as restrictive as you say, you know, it's just going to be lawyers talking to lawyers for years.
But, you know, hold on. Does anybody do white label stuff?
Yeah,
we're looking at it.
I was just going to say, it's like right now, the you know, if you're going to upload pictures and stuff, or you're, you know, you would never go to send, you don't send them to a picture service.
Right.
And I think pretty quickly you'll see that for video, because it only, the bandwidth part only matters when you have like an enormous success. You know, as long as you have sort of a middling success, then your service will be able to deal with it. So I think you just find it white labeled.
Cool. Well, it's 6:01 right now, and this is supposed to officially wrap at 6, but I read in the little docs that we got before getting here that this panel, since it's the last of the day, we can go a few minutes over. So I would say let's take the last three questions.
Thanks, guys. Is that cool?
Okay, and then we'll wrap it up.
Hi, I actually wanted to ask about the revenue models for the internet companies. And so you said you weren't going to talk about money, but since I have a question, can I ask?
Okay. Sure, why not? As
so
long as you tell somebody
to drink. I would like Scott to drink. I work for a fund. We own a lot of Disney, and it's made us a lot of money. So thank you very much.
Thanks to our shareholders.
And, yes. And Mickey, I'm always the only woman in the investment meetings I go to. And so kudos to you. Would you also drink, please?
Sure.
And then so my question is, I'm very interested in the revenue models for the internet video companies. You know, there's been some reference to ad-supported, and I'm kind of wondering where you are in the development of that, and then also, do you foresee a time when there will be an upfront market for ad space on the internet?
I mean, I can speak to Rever's model. You know, ours. You know, we have partnerships with advertisers, so whenever somebody uploads a video, we attach an ad to that video, hopefully relevant to the content. And then, you know, right now it's a CPC, it's a click-based. So whenever somebody clicks the ad at the end of the video, we split 50-50 with the person who uploaded. There's also incentive for people to share the video. So if you know, do like an affiliate program where people who share the video get 20%, and then it gets split 50-50 between the creator and Rever. You know, you have to see a lot of volume before you're going to make any like real decent money from that model. For me, that idea is more like, we're giving back to the community. It's like, you know what, you're helping us build this site. Even if it's 50 cents, you deserve whatever we're getting. Do you know what I mean? And we're providing a service with, you know, free hosting and sharing tools and all of that. Some people do really well. You know, we're seeing the need now for a little bit more flexibility in that. So we're moving towards different ad products and CPM, CPC combinations, all that stuff. I personally can't speak toward the revenue, you know, for other sites, but that's ours.
Yeah, I think there's two separate models. Like the aggregators right now are the ones making actual money, you know, Google Video, YouTube, all those big places where they have just tons of page views and can deal with that. And then there's like the creator side, and like that's the newer area where, you know, it's less tried and true. But like, you know, we just signed a big advertising deal, and most of the money we're making from it is just through page view advertising and the banner ads that we've got on the site. And so, you know, that's just the old boring way of making money. And then the new sexy way is just like, hey, we get more viewers than Adult Swim, and you know, in the exact same demographic. Why don't we just talk to all those advertisers and have them advertise on our content as well? And you know, so that's the new hot sexiness.
Yeah, for us, we've stayed away from like traditional 30-second spots within our shows. It's all been advertisers coming to us wanting really kind of a personal recommendation of their products within the show. And this really it hit for us when there was one time I was talking about I was sick on one of our shows and I wasn't drinking and I was having tea. And I plugged a tea website on the show and they called us and they're like, holy shit, we just saw a huge like ton of orders for tea. And like Dig Nation fans do not drink tea, but for some reason, like it was around the holidays and they're buying it for family or something. I have no idea. But
they gay uncles.
I drink tea. So they started advertising with us and they said, hey, we want you to, you know, talk about the tea. Like we put our little heads on little tea canisters and stuff.
No way.
Yeah. It was really weird. My mom was very proud, but it was really strange for me.
See, now I'll buy it.
Oh, Kevin, that Oolong ad you did was amazing. That's right. You have a career in tea.
But it worked for the advertiser, and that's what we're seeing when we do our GoDaddy spots and we do some of our other spots. We believe in these companies. We plug their we plug with a coupon code or something where they can actually track the number of sales that are coming through our different ad campaigns. And it's more kind of a throwback to old traditional radio, but it's working for them, and they're very happy. And that's what we're doing on pretty much all of our shows now.
Cool. I was just trying to see if there was a photo of you with your head on a mug in your on a tea. Yeah, it's not in Google.
We're doing another one though this season.
Bottom link. Season. This one here. Oh.
I don't know.
Or at least a dig. Into it. Let's see. Yeah, it's gone.
Oops.
Cool. All right. Well, last question.
Yeah, I actually just wanted to address a couple questions. No, I don't have questions. A couple questions were answered. I wanted to maybe add a few things and clarify a few things.
Sure.
I actually sat in the Lonely Girl 13 panel or Lonely 50. Girl 15 panel, and I actually heard, I might have heard this wrong, but they're actually getting more views now from their website than they are from YouTube. I think initially they were more popular on YouTube, then they built in a bunch of
cool. Really it might have changed in the months since
community functionality into their own website. And so now they get about, I think, 80,000 on YouTube. And total of 300,000, so I'm assuming the rest come from their website. I'm pretty sure.
I think part of their issue, though, is that it's really hard to manage a community in two places.
Right.
And they have, like, completely different, you know, parameters and how people talk to each other and all that. And YouTube
the functionality is a lot more robust on their own website. And so, but I think this also comes to another question someone asked a few minutes ago about whether they should syndicate out to several websites or keep it close to home. And I think someone answered keep it close to home. But one of the problems with that is, all of these portals out there from Rever, YouTube, I work for DivX, we have Stage 6, they're building in really robust monetization functionality that you may not be able to build into your own website. And so if you can figure out a way to monetize your content while keeping it close to home, fine. But, you know, there's a lot of opportunity by syndicating out to several websites, including, you know, a lot of them are built in.
Ben Cote doesn't know what you're talking about. DivX Stage 6 in the front row, so I don't know. But you're right.
Ben
absolutely.
Here?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and like
absolutely.
I know, it's true. I guess I'm using it as an infomercial like everyone else does, but
good.
Good. But you know, on ours in Stage 6, you know, we'll have download to own in the next month, ad supported, you know, several. We'll have six monetization options by the end of 2007 probably, and all these other websites will as well.
Cool.
So we
can check you out at stage6.divx.com, right? Yeah. All right. Just want to end on that. Everybody's got a pin through thing at the very last second. That's cool. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Cheers.